Do Your R&D, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh. Introduction. The most important invention Thomas Edison gave us was not an invention at all. It was the process of invention, the codification of the discrete steps to take a raw idea to a commercial product. This was the basis of his invention factory concept, which later morphed into what we recognize today as team-based corporate R&D. It is widely applicable across all sectors of the R&D community, industrial, academic, and governmental. By the time Edison died in 1931, major companies had formalized their own corporate R&D facilities, as shown below. Edison, Menlo Park, 1876, West Orange, 1887. J&J, 1891. National Starch, 1895. General Electric, 1885. Westinghouse, 1904. Campbell Soup, 1939. Hoffman LaRoche, 1929. Union Carbide, 1925. DuPont, 1903. Merck, 1891. Benjamin Moore, 1904. Exxon, 1919, Allied Signal, 1943, Bell Labs, 1925, Mobil, 1925, Nabisco, 1958, Engelhard, 1920, RCA, 1920. During World War I, Edison was summoned to Washington to bring his inventive genius and R&D process to bear on the German U-boat problem, searching for ways to better detect them. In Washington, D.C., he assembled teams of inventors, scientists, engineers, and technologists to work on the problem. After the war, this led to the formation of the Naval Research Labs in 1923, and later influenced the formation and structure of the Manhattan Project teams, the development of the atomic bomb, and the major national labs in the 1950s and 60s that followed, including NASA. R&D is powerful stuff. The lifeblood of new product development, the groundwork of what we refer to as technologically driven progress. However, R&D is often seen as an expense that is difficult to quantify, especially in harsh economic times and tight budgets. Those who do R&D as part of their routine work activities have a powerful, visceral feel for it. Great leading companies like DuPont and 3M swear by its application and are noted for continuous innovation over long periods of time, especially DuPont, one of the oldest companies in the nation. You might say it is imprinted into the corporate DNA. The business end of a company can, however, have serious doubts about just what needs to be done and financed through R&D. If there is a place a company can quickly lose its edge, it is in R&D. Too many top-notch organizations succumbed to cutting their R&D budgets and down the line paid the price. To do R&D right, you must know where you are going and why, and what technologies you intend to use to get there. It is part of the strategic planning of a company, using the intellectual property and specialized knowledge that is possessed to project its competitiveness out into future markets. R&D is the process that converts uncertainty into risk. It is technological due diligence. In this volume, I shall combine my 36 years of industrial R&D experience and new product development with 10 years of teaching the principles of R&D project management as an adjunct graduate professor at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, Newark College of Engineering, along with many publications and presentations on this topic. All this gets mixed together with my decade of docent and special lecturing experience at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park in West Orange, New Jersey, decades of experience in inventing, patenting, and commercialization, and some consulting. I hope you enjoy and profit by my history and experiences. Harry Roman. R&D in Perspective. Examine the top five 2015 money spenders in R&D. This international data is available through various annual R&D reports, summaries, and industry magazines. U.S., $473 billion. China, $403. European Union, $334. Japan, $171. Germany, $106. In 2010, all R&D expenditures around the world totaled approximately $1 trillion. The urgency or intensity with which a nation spends R&D funds can be expressed by looking at the percentage that R&D funding is to a nation's economy, GDP. Again, the top five spenders and their intensity. U.S., 2.7% of GDP. China, 2.1%. European Union, 1.9%, Japan, 3.6%, Germany, 2.8%. It is interesting to note that both Israel and South Korea have the greatest intensities at 4.1% and 4.3% respectively. Obviously, these numbers change from year to year, and the amount of R&D intensity also varies year to year among major industries. Industrial R&D expenditures are likely to reflect the nature of the industry and its competitiveness. For instance, in the utility industry, the intensity, measured as a percent of revenue, is probably less than 1%, while in the pharmaceutical business, it can be well over 20%. The national average for all industries is about 3.5%. The R&D process. Let's examine the simple seven-step invention process that allows anyone on the planet, be they professional or amateur, to perform Edison-style systematic R&D to create new products. This was the magic of Edison, scientifically combining invention with the marketplace, what we call entrepreneurship. For him, such a process manifested itself as vertical integration of his talent and resources. But today, this process may be performed in a variety of ways, utilizing partnerships, shared or contracted services. Here are the seven key steps. 1. Identify a problem worth solving. 2. Evaluate the economics, market needs. 3. Identify constraints, impacts, challenges. 4. Identify, test potential solutions. Invent. 5. Validate invention against steps 1, 2, and 3. Repeat steps 1 through 5 if necessary. 6. Market the invention. 7. Improve and grow the invention. This necessarily team-based effort is repeatable and easily understood. It tells us that invention is an iterative process, tied to an important understanding of what people want and what the market is willing to accept as a solution. And that once the new product is launched, one must continually grow and improve it. Invention is designing with constraints. For the social, environmental, legal, and regulatory impacts of the new product on the modern world must be given the same fidelity in analysis as the technical and economic aspects of the invention. Thus, we may finally conclude that invention is both interdisciplinary and multidimensional in its outlook. It is a process that must be planned, organized, and implemented with care and strategic intent. Invention is a leadership thing. R&D and risk. The complete manager is both a manager and a leader, tactical and strategic in outlook. In these days of cost-cutting and next-quarteritis, it is easy to lose focus on the strategic aspects of doing business, especially R&D. Don't fall prey to this trap. It will most certainly come back to haunt you. Business is all about taking risks. You wouldn't propose an expensive program to your senior management if it contained a high degree of uncertainty. But you would take one to them wherein you could quantify the risks involved. We take chances and gamble on things precisely because we know the risk or odds for success, which brings me to the value of R&D. R&D is the process that converts uncertainty into risk. Since the future contains all sorts of uncertainty, we do R&D to narrow that uncertainty down into portfolios of risk we are able to understand and concentrate corporate resources upon. It's the vision thing again. Connecting senior management to future dreams, tempered with quantitative analysis and realistic odds for success. Not too long ago, I heard some speakers from one of the national labs quote a very interesting statistic. Immediately following deregulation of the telephone industry, there was severe cost-cutting in the R&D areas. Then, over a decade later, the industry was spending a total amount of money on R&D that was at least four times greater than the R&D budgets combined for all the companies prior to deregulation. I guess they learned the lesson that the more competition there is, the more the need for R&D. After working 36 years in R&D and teaching graduate courses about how to manage it, I offer the following observations, my own personal insights. No company ever became great because it cut the most out of its budget, or downsized better than anyone else, or had the greatest accounting system for tracking costs, or reduced salaries and fired everyone over 45. Companies become great because they have the courage to establish a vision of the future and pursue that vision with passion and determination, making adjustments along the way, and having the stomach and conviction to take the necessary R&D risks. Great companies dream first and then plan on how to get the funds to accomplish their goals. They don't limit their dream by how much money they happen to have in their wallets at the time. Simply doing the big deal is not going to make you a great company either. The big deals are few and far between. You win by making something and then selling it, and doing this before your competitor does. And once you have established yourself in the market, you do two kinds of R&D. One that will lead to incremental improvements to keep you ahead of the copycats, and revolutionary R&D that will catch your competitors flat-footed, completely by surprise. R&D is a continuous activity of the modern corporation. It should never be seen as just another expense. It is an absolutely necessary investment in the future. R&D is not for the impatient manager. Leaders know that good technology takes resources to develop. It is an investment in time, vision, and money. You do R&D when the sun is shining on your business, so there will be something in the bank when the dark clouds of competition roil overhead. If you are uncompetitive today, perhaps you did not have the patience and wisdom to do R&D in the past to anticipate this situation. R&D is an insurance policy against the inevitable roller coaster rides of doing business. According to DuPont, one of the all-time greats in doing R&D, it takes about 164 raw ideas to create four really good ones. Be prepared to practice patience. Developing technology is not the toughest part of R&D. It's getting the buy-in of other company departments. Contrary to popular belief, most new products fail not because of technological defects. They fail because the various departments of a company have insulated themselves from each other and don't pull together as a team. They have developed their own cultures. R&D works best in a company when its spirit transcends departmental boundaries and it becomes, in essence, a corporate culture. This is an area for increased corporate cooperation. About 75% of new product failures are attributed to interdepartmental breakdowns, the equivalent in football of fumbling the ball. R&D project managers out there, keep this uppermost in mind if you are building interdepartmental project teams. R&D is supposed to be messy. It is a lot like war. There are false starts, weapons that don't work right the first time, and lots of crosstalk over the airwaves. It's a free and spontaneous exchange of ideas and concepts with people trying to make sense out of the uncertainty of the future. It tries to quantify risk through the scientific process and the results achieved from relentless inquiry. To the accountant type, it looks like an undisciplined process, just ripe for cost controls and monthly progress reports. In reality, from this mess occurs something of value to the company. The leader appreciates this and is comfortable managing the ambiguities that are inevitable in R&D. This is not traditional project management and should never be confused with it. R&D depends on experienced people who know the history of the company, can tell you where the dead ends are, know the right people to talk to, can help you put a team in place quickly to solve critical problems, and know how to get the real work done. A nurturing environment is essential to R&D. Good interpersonal relationships and the informal organization chart drive R&D. That is precisely why it appears to be messy. Freeze both of these information networks solid through fear and budgetary intimidation, and the well of creativity will dry up. There will be no new products and nothing but uncertainty to deal with. Just what your competition would like. In an R&D environment, people need to communicate rapidly, both up and down and across the organization, making low, flat organizational structures paramount to quick decision-making. Combining this with trust makes for the rapid communication of ideas and cross-pollination of technological concepts a powerful stimulus for innovation. You are best served by doing both centralized and dispersed forms of R&D, but never will just dispersed R&D result in competitive advantage. There are just too many things working against its success. Too much distributed R&D has resulted from the misguided notion that every last thing a company does must be economically justified immediately to the nth degree. This has often resulted in being penny-wise and pound-foolish. You can have the accounting correct and still get your clock cleaned by the competition. From my experience, it is better to be competitive and have some sloppiness in the accounting and hard evaluation of the worth of R&D projects rather than the other way around. To sum up, manage your R&D resources wisely. Not to do R&D is foolish. Remember, develop a portfolio of short, medium, and long-range investments, and then have the courage to stay the course. But start, always start, with what you want to accomplish. Don't limit your dreams by your current corporate allowance. Dream first. Define the future you envision for your company and plan the R&D programs, projects, and organizational structures that will exploit your particular strengths. And then figure out how to get the money. If money is short, then develop a phased approach to your R&D, one that sets a timetable with measurable gates, milestones, or critical junctures for senior management to review and approve. But never lose sight of that future vision. Build relentlessly toward it. Be a leader. Do your R&D. R&D Project Management. The roots for modern-day R&D project management date back to the late 1800s, when Thomas Edison was forging his invention factory industrial R&D concept. It is plainly evident in the small cluster of buildings, which still stand today for public visitation, that formed the central focus of his legendary West Orange Labs. Here, in his epicenter of creativity and invention, a two-acre nucleus of buildings formed the heart of Edison's revolutionary enterprise, an enterprise that would come to define today's modern industrial model. The small buildings arranged to the side of the main prototyping building, Invention Factory, contained important specialty expertise and equipment that would be needed to support the multidisciplined nature of invention. There was a physics-electrical lab, a chemistry lab, a metallurgical shop, a model-making shop, and supporting all this were engineers, scientists, mathematicians, inventors, technologists, machinists, draftsmen, and electricians. Edison knew back then that bringing ideas from concept to market required a multitude of talents and skills, and he had marketing, legal, accounting, economic, and sales expertise on hand as well. Today's modern business structure emerges from this integrated approach Edison formed for the solving of problems and the launching of new products. Edison becomes the preeminent industrial project manager, forming interdisciplinary project teams, often overseeing as many as 30 to 40 teams at once. He is the premier integrated thinker of his time, matching people, talents, resources, and disciplines to creatively solve multidimensional problems. It is interesting to note how that 2-acre parcel of buildings at West Orange produced enough new product ideas to keep the surrounding 20 acres of massive buildings around it busy turning out new products. Those factory buildings are gone now, but at one time, the great inventor had 30 companies and 10,000 employees working under the imprimatur of Thomas Edison Industries. This is the iron core of strength of the West Orange Labs, a focus for turning ideas into new products and creating many jobs as well. In fact, we can estimate the multiplicative power of Edison's R&D. We know about 250 people worked in his invention factory and in those little specialty buildings. If all that brain power and value added by experts kept 10,000 people employed, then his form of R&D had a leverage factor of 40 to 1. Why would any executive fight against spending money on R&D? Edison's seminal work at West Orange succeeds in perpetuating the industrial revolution of the late 1800s up to present times. His work literally codifies the process of conducting and focusing R&D toward the making of new products, a process that revolutionized the cottage industry of invention into a commercial powerhouse and inspired generations of inventors and entrepreneurs. It is Edison's greatest invention. Doing R&D right. Over the 3+ decades I have performed R&D and acted in a project manager, program manager mode, I should like to end this volume with some tips about doing R&D right. No particular order or priority here, simply a listing of topics I remember most. Be a snowplow for the team. Move obstacles and clear the path for the team to progress. Meet often with your project team. Keep them engaged and aware of how their work relates to the bigger company goals and mission. Make sure team members have the ability to grow and mature in their professions, as well as advancing the team forward. If you are managing interdepartmental teams, strive for everyone to share in the successes of the team, and keep all the departments represented apprised of what is going on. Communicate regularly. Make sure the team knows and understands the value to the company of the R&D being performed. Cost-benefit analyses are important in keeping the team and its work uppermost in the minds of senior management. This is most important if the R&D is internally directed and will result in operating cost and efficiency improvements for the company. Avoid problems between R&D staff and operating department personnel who don't have time for R&D. When introducing robots into nuclear power plants, I assembled a team of R&D and operating personnel to do two important things before any robots were considered for application. Thoroughly examine the cost benefits of robots in the plants and how they would be evaluated, and identify a variety of early potential applications. The final team report, which took 2 years to complete, was followed by 7 years of application and large savings to the company. It pays to do upfront work and preparation with your team. Keep lab notebooks and document inventions and new technology developed. Protect intellectual property. File patent applications and strictly control discussions of new technology in both oral and written venues. Thomas Edison had a great 4-step philosophy for entrepreneurship, which is also applicable to R&D project teams. Think out of the box. Be entrepreneurial. Fail your way to success. Constantly improve your products and processes. Make sure your team knows that failure is part of the R&D equation, and learning from failure is a very powerful way to advance your goals. Hold post-mortem teardown sessions following failures and together learn from the experience. Be on the lookout for how the technology your team is developing might be combined or used in conjunction with that of other corporate teams. Leveraging R&D findings between teams is beneficial and can lead to whole new synergies and families of technology your company can be using. It is both tactically and strategically important. Closing out R&D projects and finalizing all costs is just as important as launching new projects. Make sure this important task is always performed, as it shows how important and seriously you as a project manager regard the company's resources. Remember, it is not what you know that is important, but what you can do with what you know that positions the company in a strategic position in the marketplace. About the author. Harry T. Roman holds 12 U.S. patents, has received numerous engineering, invention, and teaching awards, and has published more than 550 scientific papers, articles, monographs, and books. In 1999, the New Jersey Technology Education and Engineering Association named Roman a Distinguished Technology Educator. In 2005, the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame honored him with an Inventor of the Year Award for his application of mobile robots in hazardous work environments. In 1996, IEEE honored Roman with a Meritorious Achievement Award for developing continuing education products for IEEE members. Again, in 2006, IEEE honored him with an Outstanding Engineer Award. Roman also received IEEE's 2015 Region 1 Excellence in Teaching Award. Every month, more than 250,000 educators read his feature articles appearing in various national publications. In PSE&G's R&D group, where Roman worked for 36 years, he directed and consulted on more than $100 million worth of projects and programs and taught graduate-level R&D project management courses at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. Throughout his engineering career, Roman worked with schools around the state, bringing the excitement of real-world problem-solving into the classroom. Retired since 2006, he has published more than 70 resource books, math card games, and science kits for teachers, products valued for their head-in-hands approach to teaching creativity, invention, STEM, engineering, and alternate energy topics in the classroom. Roman now spends many hours in the classroom working with teachers and students in West Orange, Montclair, and Livingston, conducting special student project team challenges. He is an advisor and author to the Edison Innovation Foundation and docent and special lecturer at the Thomas Edison National Historic Park in West Orange. Roman also admits to writing and publishing poetry and short stories. For the past 3 years, he has been teaching graduate school at Montclair State University in their teaching college, where he co-teaches a unique course about applying STEM techniques in the classroom. This has been Do Your R&D, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh.